We'll throw on Ted Robinson, the longtime voice of the 49ers. We just talked to Zane Beatles. We talked to John Lynch. We're going to actually start walking towards where we need to get to. But as you look at this 49ers team, you know, we've seen him practice with the Broncos the last couple of years. That gap certainly seems like it's closing. I don't want to say close. But you can tell that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are making their mark on this organization with some of the roster upgrades.
Well, I've heard that same thing. Now, I wasn't in Denver last year for the joint practices. I was at the Olympics, and so I missed it. But I've heard a lot of tales about it that weren't very complimentary from the 49ers side.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, for example, the reaction afterwards was, wow, what a difference. Because last year, the Broncos pretty much beat us around.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday, the guys felt much better about the 49er people felt much better about their performance. So it's reflective, I think, for all of you, for Bronco fans listening, it's reflective of the vibe since February in here. It's way better. John has been phenomenal as the front face of the football organization, mm-hmm. something we really haven't had around here in a long time. Kyle has grown more comfortable in his role because he's never had to be a media guy. He's mm-hmm. always been a position coach or coordinator. He's never had that responsibility. He's growing into that. But the openness, the transparency, which is in Silicon Valley where we're standing, is a huge word.
Mm-hmm.
And the other word I'll use is collaboration. The two of them are working together. Even if they differ, they talk it out, and it's just so much healthier here. Now, as you all know, and Steve knows it better than anybody, none of that matters when you start playing games.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's the next key. Now, the next key is we need to see on Sundays that there's an improved product on the field.
Now, do you get a sense from the fans here that they have the fans are supportive of both Kyle and John in their new positions?
Absolutely, Steve. So draft night here, hosting a little event for season ticket holders, and I'm going to say that in 2016, we had Chip Kelly come out as the coach. We probably had 500 people. This year there were 11,000 people in the stadium on draft night, where nothing happens, by the way, right? Where nothing happens. And then an open practice a week and a half ago in the stadium, 25,000 showed up. So coming off 2-14,
right?
It just tells you that these people are starved. These fans are starved. We had a little taste of it here during 3 years in 2011, 12, and 13, and then it cratered. Last year was everything speaks for itself.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but from looking at the 49ers personnel, it looks like you guys have some players on the team.
Well, defense, we do.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I think this is a prove-it camp for a lot on defense.
Armstead at the top of the list, but he looks much improved.
Well, the last three number one draft picks are defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have, if you look at the defensive depth chart, just look at the depth chart right now, it's a lot of high draft picks over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's defense statistically was the worst in the history of the franchise. So clearly that doesn't mesh.
Right.
Right? How can you have this many high draft picks and have the performance be that bad?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a prove it, I think, for me on defense, that this defense has to play better. Offensively, it's a blank slate for all of us. The position players are almost all new. The quarterbacks are all new. The wide receivers are all new except Jeremy Curley. The only running back returning is Carlos Hyde. Tight ends are an interesting mix. You have three holdovers and three newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the fiercest single position battle on the team. But offense, to me, is a real blank slate, and we're all interested here to see Kyle's offensive wizardry and how well regarded it is. What will it generate from a new collection of players?
Exactly.
Ted Robinson, voice of the 49ers, here with us just for another minute, then we got to go find our ride, Steve.
We may be looking at our ride.
Yeah, we may be walking all the way back to the team hotel. But it seems like Kyle and John are really working well together, and you don't normally see a six-year contract in either of those positions too often, unless you're talking about a guy named Bill Belichick or something like that. So are you seeing that, and are the people that have been around the organization for a long time seeing those guys working well together and kind of what their shared vision is?
Right. From the very beginning, and of course, if Broncos fans aren't familiar, the reason John Lynch got the job was Kyle Shanahan told Jed York, CEO of the team, you need to meet John. He's interested in doing this. So John actually flew up here, stayed at Jed York's home for two nights in January, and they bonded over that meeting. And as a result, it was kind of handshake, winked, understood that Kyle was going to be the head coach as soon as Atlanta's season was over. John becomes the GM. I'll tell you this, the 49ers had three people that went out on the coaching search. Three people. All of them were under 40. Okay? So I thought to myself, and I said it to some of our colleagues inside, I said, you know, I'm not suspecting they're coming back with me, who could be their father, as their head coach.
It wasn't great for back, Dave Tobe.
Right. They're going to come back with somebody they can relate to, and that's Kyle. He's 37. I think Jed, I believe, is 36, so there's a connection. John's a little bit older, but skews young. The energy together has been terrific, and here's the last part I'll tell you, is what I refer to as the magnet effect. Who do you attract to draw? Who wants to come play around you as a player or you as a coach for you, work for you? Kyle attracted really good assistant coaches to come here. And John, the first thing he did was got Adam Peters.
Right.
John Elway graciously allowed Adam to make the move. And then Mark Mayhew, who's a GM in the league, comes to work here. That magnet effect, to me, speaks volumes. Yeah. We haven't seen that around here in a long time. And, of course, to me, it spoke loudly that John has some cred. These people who have options were willing to sign on and work here.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I noticed the first day yesterday when we were over here was that I saw some of the alumni hanging out, some of the guys who played in years past.
Yes.
And is the 49ers organization, trying to be conscious about getting those guys included?
Well, it has happened.
In terms of camp.
Yeah, over my – that's my ninth year here, and I've seen it quite a bit. There's been a lot of attempts, and it's gone in waves. Some of it's depending on the coach. But John Lynch has made a very – and, of course, Kyle, because he has some history as a young guy around here. When Dad was working, they've made a more conscious effort. So you did. You had Steve Young and Ronnie Lott were here. I know they're trying to get Joe Montana. I thought Joe was going to be here Monday. It turned out he had another issue going on. He couldn't, but that's something they're active. And I don't know. I'll be honest with you, Steve. I don't know how much it resonates with the fans. It resonates loudly with the fan base.
Yeah.
This fan base here, that dynasty is still magic here.
Exactly.
It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I get a little bit on sideways only because when, for example, in 2011, when the 49ers made the playoffs, my son was in his 20s. He doesn't know the dynasty. He knows the dynasty because he hears me talking about it.
Good point.
He sees it on NFL films.
Right.
But this was the first time he had ever seen the 49ers be relevant.
Right.
And that's important. You have to have that next generation of fans that gets captured. So at some point, yes, it's important to have these people be part of it and to have their honor. The stadium, by the way, you'll see it on Saturday. There's far more signage, far more of an acknowledgement of the 49ers history in the stadium this year. That's something that the fans spoke loudly about that they felt was missing the first 3 years.
Yeah.
And front office listened, and they've responded this year. So it is important to the fan base here to have those people.
Those young fans, there's going to be some that are up for grabs with the Raiders moving at some point or already obviously that may have just been young kids that didn't have a dog in the fight. So, Ted, we really appreciate it.
Great to see you guys.
Thank you very much, Ted.
Man, I'm impressed with this, and this is the first mobile interview I've ever done, man.
So,
you are cutting edge.
We are cutting edge, so we really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Mike Kliss, Bronco Insider from 9 News, presented by Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development. Learn the facts at cred.org. Mike, do you ever feel like the Turk sometimes when you're going up to try to get quotes from these guys? I know I have.
I'm sorry, guys. I think I just walked in a space in the hotel where you dropped out on me. Say that again.
Have you ever felt like a Turk going to get an interview with the guy? We just had Tyler telling us what he doesn't care for as far as the qualities in a Turk. So,
yeah, I don't think I've ever had that type of situation. After a game, if a guy has a fumble or, I remember in baseball going up to Mario La Rosa when he was with the Atlanta Braves. He had four errors. He ended with a big double play. It was like the worst game one person has ever had in the majors. And I went up and talked to him. I had to talk to him because it was the worst game I had ever seen. He was a good player. I think he played about 10 years. And those moments aren't easy. He handled it. I think I was a little delicate with the way I presented my questions. When you're interviewing the game's GOAT, you do kind of feel like a Turk sometimes.
I'll tell you guys, since we're sharing story time real quickly, I went into the Rockies locker room, Mike. It was September in 99 because I just started at KOA. I was an intern. I was sent to get audio. The Rockies lost to the Diamondbacks by some ridiculous – it was like a softball score, like 22-5 or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
A guy that by the name of Kurt Abbott, a second baseman, was one of the few guys to have an RBI that day. So I thought he was a safe interview. So I walked up to ask him if I could just get a couple of questions. Because you know how it is. You unfortunately work too many of those Rockies locker rooms where it's dead silent in there. And it was uncomfortable. And there wasn't too many people to get sound from because not much went right that day. So I asked if I could just get a little sound from him, not even sure what I was going to ask. And he dog cussed me out of that place so badly for even asking for an interview. You know, in Seinfeld where George Costanza just walks out of Steinbrenner's office as he's still talking. That's kind of what I did out of the clip. Yeah. And that's what I did is he cussed me all the way to the door. So
I like, you know, to some degree, not much, but to some degree, I feel a tiny bit bad for you, Mike, because, you know, written words are much more permanent than spoken words. So, you know, what you do, it's much more permanent than what I do. All right. So I recognize that. I got a small degree of respect for you. Okay.
Small. You're up to small, Mike. Yeah.
Well, look, we're talking about. I mean, I didn't talk to him for 8 years of my NFL career. We're building. We're working on our relationship.
Yeah, and I'm sure Mike's forgotten that. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Bygones are bygones.
Let me ask you about practice. Let me ask you about practice yesterday, buddy. Sounds like the two QBs. They both had reasonably good days. If you had to give the edge to one guy on his performance over the entire day, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a tough one, and I'll tell you why. After two periods, I was ready to say, hey, what's going on here? It looks like Paxton's going to be the Broncos quarterback on the opening day against the Chargers. And because Trevor was not good, he threw one ball right in the chest of number 50 for the 49ers, a linebacker, and the guy dropped the ball. This was during a team period. And Paxton was looking pretty good. Paxton looked really good the first two team periods. He had the first team in the first two 11-on-11 periods. Then it kind of went to the third period. Paxton started throwing the ball erratically. He started getting some comments from the 49ers press who were seeing him for the first time. And you know, I guess maybe we're conditioned. When Paxton misses, he misses. You know, he can be really wild. And he was having some of those throws. And the rest of the practice, the blitz period, he did not do very well at all. And, of course, Simeon, being a little calmer and more experienced, I thought really won the blitz period. The two-minute drill, the two-minute hurry-up, Simeon did better than Paxton. So I guess because of the blitz period and the 2 minute drill, which I think are the most important, Simeon would have been the guy. But it was tough. Paxton was clearly better early. Simeon was clearly better late.
Okay. So where does that leave us in the race, right? Where we've been?
Wait, who won? You didn't tell me who won.
Because it was even. You kind of tweeted that out, right, Mike? Kind of like, well, we've not really done anything here today.
There's no ties in football. Oh, yeah, wait, sometimes there are.
And so it goes. You know, because Paxton, I guess because Paxton had more first-team reps, and this is what it's about. It's about who's going to be the first-teamer. I would say Paxton had the better day all in all. Because he had more first-team reps, I would say, and he played well early, I would say Paxton had the more encouraging day.
All right, I got to ask you. I just told Andy it was his turn, but I'm jumping in again. Sorry. I got to ask you about the first-team reps there, because I did read your article this morning about Paxton getting 60% of the reps, and I believe that was since last week's game overall. Am I correct there?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's been getting about 60% of the reps since last week's game. But let me ask you this. I mean, is that something that is noticeable to the naked eye, or do you have to chart that? Because oftentimes, say move the ball period, maybe Paxton just had a longer drive than Trevor, and that's why he's got 60%. Or maybe, you know, there's a million different reasons why it could be – just a little bit off, but is it noticeable to the naked eye, or would you have to chart it to notice that it's 60%?
You don't have to chart every play. In fact, it probably was more like 70% because on the third period when Trevor got the first team, he threw a pick on the first play, and so the first team was out of there. And then Paxton went out there. So they only got one play on the first set of plays in, during one period.
Interesting.
The fact that Paxton has, and it's not just 60%, they have five team periods. At least they did yesterday, and I think that's pretty consistent. Maybe they only have four sometimes. But in the five periods, I have noticed Paxton has gotten the bulk of it, especially early. And then, like yesterday, the first two team periods, it was Paxton with the first team, Trevor with the second team. And maybe that had something to do with Trevor not playing well early. And then Simeon got the third, and then Paxton went in for the fourth. So he really had, you know, at one point, he had 75% of the reps. That jumps out at you. You're saying, what's going on here? And then especially when he got the first and second first team reps. And he played well. And I was talking to Andrew Mason. I was like, is something going on here? Something feels funny to me. Because, you know, we've all been saying that Simeon has, you know, been winning the race or winning the competition or leading the competition, I guess I should say. And then we got all of a sudden Paxton is getting a lot of love practice-wise as far as number of reps. So it's happened this week. It has not happened like this, Tyler. I have not noticed it like this since the start of OTAs. Mm. It's been pretty even, Steven, but it's been more Paxton. And I don't know. I didn't notice Trevor getting these many first team reps last week.
Well, but how much of that has to do with, I don't know. Look, Mike, I think a lot of us feel like that Trevor is winning the job right now. And a lot of us have said, you've even written critical week for Paxton Lynch. How much of this is just, all right, here it is. Show us or don't. Could that be part of this? I mean, I guess if you're laying this scenario out for us next week and that's leading up to Green Bay, I'm going to really start to I'm going to be waiting on the starting quarterback announcement, frankly, if we don't get it Monday.
They have to name their starting quarterback next week, early next week. I said Monday. Vance Joseph danced around that, maybe because he's going to announce it on Sunday, you know, but he's got to announce the starting quarterback after this game, not directly after this game. He has to do it. He has to do it before preseason game three against Green Bay.
Look, I don't disagree, Mike. I think you're accurate in what would be a reasonable assessment of the situation. But when I hear Vance Joseph say that preemptively, that I might not name somebody on Monday, and that really doesn't stress me out. To me, that's a guy trying to take control of the situation and say, look, I might not name a guy until after the third game. And Mike Rice, our own Mike Rice here on Orange and Blue 760, he told us yesterday, it was a reminder to myself that I'd forgotten, Trevor Siemian was not named the starter last year until after the third preseason game. Now, he started that game, but he was not named the starter until after the third preseason game. So I don't know. Do you see it similarly to me that
the reason why he wasn't is because they were trying to trade Mark Sanchez. And
they wanted people to think he was still a starter.
Yeah, he was still in play for the starter.
Interesting.
So, but by starting the third game, it was Trevor. And so, you know, whoever they have starting the third game will be their starter. But here, the third game's the most important. Well, the second game is the second most important. It's just I'm reading this situation, guys. If Trevor's going to be the starter, which a lot of people, not necessarily me, but I'm talking about, you know, players I talk to off the record, observers, you know, the some people around the team. I don't want to get too close to identifying them, but they say it's like they think it's a foregone conclusion. It's Trevor. Well, if that's true, it just seems odd to me that Lynch is getting so much first team love this week. It's only a few days away before they have to make the announcement. And in my view, anyway, I do think we're going to know next week. But it's just
here's
it's
the just thing. I'll tell you what, Mike.
Lynch is getting so much first team love. So I don't know. Is it possible that Lynch is going to be the starter against the Chargers? I have a little more belief, that it will be today than I did yesterday morning at this time.
I'll just say this. I think we're all a little befuddled by how much Vance Joseph seems to resist letting anybody be in the lead. Look, I think this is clear. They want Lynch to be the starter. The question is, will he show them enough to justify the decision in the locker room? And I think what you're kind of describing, at least, I think from those of us that have different conversations out of different avenues, I'll put it that way, I think that it's the common thought is in the locker room right now, I don't think you can name Lynch and not have a problem on your hands. How about I put it that way? I think to this point, Trevor still has the confidence of the locker room. We'll see if what goes on this week in practice, which is maybe why he is getting so much of the bulk of the work, maybe this is his last opportunity to even win the locker room fully. I'm sure guys like him. I'm sure guys will play with him. But I think the locker room knows who they think the starting guy is right now, and I'm just not sure it's Paxton. We have a request from Doug, and I want to ask this question. Doug wants to know, how's the number one D looking? Are the 49ers struggling against the number one D the way the Broncos' number one offense has?
That's a good question. They divided up in these joint practices. They divided up offense, like Broncos' offense is against the 49ers' defense on one field, and then the defense goes against the offense on the other field. And they don't allow us to get in the middle. You know, John Lynch stands in the middle. Elway stands in the middle. Vance Joseph, and they say it's kind of like watching a tennis matches where you're watching two courts at one time. Well, we don't have that access. We can't stand in the end zone. We have to pick one field or the other. And I stay with the offense, so I don't know how the defense did against the 49ers offense. And I'm gonna tell you what, I'm not gonna know today either. I'm sticking with the quarter. I'm sticking with the quarterback.
I don't blame you.
You got a story to write, right? So
Look, I don't blame him. I mean, that's the story.
Yeah, I think we're all confident the D looks pretty darn good there, Doug. But you know what? We'll try to fish that out as we go. Hey, Mike, we appreciate the time, and we look forward to whatever summary you can give us tomorrow from this battle.
All right, thanks, guys.
You're actually the first GM that we've had on our new show here on the Broncos Blitz. I don't know why John Elway refuses to talk to Steve Atwater, but John Lynch, Broncos Ring of Famer, with another Broncos Ring of Famer, Steve Atwater, myself, Brandon Cristall here. How's things going so far now that y'all have been playing football for a few weeks? Because we saw you the owners' meetings and all that good stuff, but how are things? And at your charity event, too.
Yeah, you know, this is why you do it. You spend all that time in the off season, and then you put the product on the field. And, you know, I'm thrilled this thing came together. It was down at the Combine when VJ and John came up to me and said, hey, would you guys like to scrimmage? And, you know, we did it last year. We'd like to come out to your place this year. We got some concerts or whatever. And I said, hey, we're all over that. Let me talk to Kyle. And, it's such valuable work, you know, because you get used to your own team.
Oh,
and
guys,
you know their audibles. They know your stuff. And, and this is real football. You're playing against new competition. Does it get a little chippy from time to time? Yes, but I still think the last 2 days, really productive work and good competition. And, you know, for us, that's a playoff-ready team. We're not there yet, but we're going to compete. And so I was proud of the way we competed and, you know, really, really good work. And I know the Broncos feel that way as well.
Yeah. We were talking to a couple of our guys from yesterday because offensively yesterday I felt like our guys came out I won't say they came out flat, but you guys came out and basically punched us in the mouth.
Yeah.
we felt like we picked it up today and had a much better practice.
Well, I felt like VJ talked to him last night because it was a different energy.
Well, I was going to ask, did you talk to your team beforehand and say, hey, man, last year, you know, things went a certain way?
Well, I leave that to Kyle, but Kyle's got him well prepared, you know, and you know, this is a great barometer for us, a great measuring stick, because we know this is a playoff-ready team in Denver. And like I said, we're coming off a 2-14 team year. We've overhauled our roster. We're really proud of the culture we're building, the effort guys are competing with.
Yeah.
But we got to keep building it. And it's great to stack up against a team like the Broncos. And, you know, I think you're right. I think yesterday, you know, we did pretty well. And today they came out and I think controlled us for the most part.
Steve Atwater went and played his final year with the Jets and had to play a game in Denver.
Yeah.
You obviously have been removed from the game, but I got to think that whenever you play the Bucs or the Broncos, I get this is preseason and Saturday's really not going to matter, and that's why practices like this make a lot of sense. But is it a little weird? I mean, you're such good friends with John. Yeah. You're a Ring of Famer, the organization. You have so many people that you're tight with.
Yeah.
Was it a little weird? I mean, or are you all Niners all the time and you're able to
kind of just every now and then you forget which team you're on. You know, I was hanging out at one point. I was hanging out with all the Denver guys. Whoa, I'm over there. But look, for all the people, because some people will come up to me sometimes and say, hey, would you sign a Broncos jersey? Of course I will. That was a big part of who I am. And, at some point I wanted to do this, and there's another guy named John who had the job and is doing really well at it. I had to go find someplace else. You struggle with that. But, what I found here was a place, Steve, there was a time where the 49ers were the organization. Yeah. It was the standard for the way first class.
We got the brakes beat off us in the Super Bowl.
The place. And so the opportunity to bring that back to glory, that intrigued me. It intrigued Kyle. And so we're thrilled to be a part of it.
Now, John, as a former player, now general manager, what are some things about being a general manager that you didn't expect in a good way?
Well, John did a pretty good job of preparing me. He said, look, the football stuff, you're going to be fine. You know football, and you're going to put some good people around you for the procedural stuff. But I just think the totality of the job, the stuff that comes by your desk, all you want to do is watch football. Mm-hmm. I think after you get the culture, set, and that takes a little while, then you can really focus on that. But there's a lot that, anything that happens from the business side, this is a football organization. At some point, it's going to touch the football side of things. And when you're trying to establish the way we believe is going to help us become a championship team, you got to be involved in everything. So I think just, like John said, hey, I wasn't joking. They weren't joking when they said general and general manager, because you touch a lot of different things and a lot of different situations. And that's important that you do. But I think that's probably what surprised me most.
John Lynch, our guest, Broncos Ring of Famer, along with Steve Atwater, another Broncos Ring of Famer. In a second, I'm going to ask both of y'all about the Hall of Fame. But I want to ask one more football question, because it comes on the heels of your press conference yesterday. Yeah. And a lot of Denver media was in there and caught that. You talked about how maybe this is an opportunity to look at the Broncos and if a deal makes sense. You already traded for Capri Bibbs draft night. Now I'm looking at your roster thinking, there's not a receiver over 6'1 that I saw. The Broncos have nothing but receivers over 6'1, save for Isaiah McKenzie. So I know you'd have to come out and say, yeah, we're keeping an eye on that. But that has to be nice when you can see 90 other guys and think, hey, if you're going to cut them, we'd rather give you a seventh before they hit the street.
It's a great opportunity for John to look at our – I mean, you're always studying other rosters, because this is – it's fluid. It's not a static league. It's fluid and injuries and things. And so I'm sure they're looking at our guys. We're looking at theirs. You can have conversations. I think the relationship only helps, because you trust the other side that they're going to be honest with you. And we both want each other to do well. But we also have to look out for the best interests of our organization. So it's a great opportunity with 90 guys on each side to kind of take a look at different groups and start to have some conversations.
All right. And then I don't really even know how to set this up, but I've talked to you about this. I've talked to Brian Dawkins, who still lives in Denver, talked to him at the Combine about it. Talked to Steve almost once every 3 days about the Hall of
bringing
Fame.
Bringing it up.
Yeah. Went to the Hall of Fame. But what the hell is it going to take? What the heck is it going to take, pardon my language, to get you badass safeties and then the other three that are coming? I mean, well, Dawkins, Polamalu, and Ed Reed, we all feel good about Ed Reed's chances. Y'all need gold jackets. Why is this taking so long?
I don't know. It's something about that position. And I think a large part of it is it's a position. There's certain positions where it's hard to quantify with numbers. Certain guys like Ronnie Lott had the interceptions, and so that's a slam dunk. But some of it is just your impact on the game. I watched this guy. He impacted the game. The other team better knew where 27 was. Same thing with Brian Dawkins. And so from a number standpoint, it's hard to say, okay, this guy belongs, And I think a big part of it, a lot of these voters are so young, they didn't watch us play. So they're in there voting. They never saw us play. So they're listening to other people. I'm a big believer in the importance of that position, because you can have a hand in so many different aspects of the game. That's what I loved about the position. At times you were covering receivers. At times you were a linebacker. At times you're rushing the passer. Mm-hmm. And so I think all that they're asked to do, I think one thing I never want to be out there trumpeting my own case, but I do want to trumpet the case for the position, because I think the importance in the game is so critical that I think more belong.
Yeah, I agree, and I get that question all the time. You know, hey, what about you and John Lynch and Brian Dawkins? And no, normally those three, and of right. course, you know, Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed, who
yeah,
I think
they're going to be fine. For,
yeah, especially Ed yeah. Reed. No
but doubt. I always say, hey, if either of us gets in, I'm happy.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because
well, sort of like Kenny Easley this year.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
I was really thrilled for Kenny.
And he brought you guys both up in his speech.
Yeah, yeah. That was nice. That was nice.
So if John goes in, I'll be there with you.
And I'll be there with you.
Yeah. Well, John, we know you got plenty of work to do. We really appreciate the time. Thanks for being our first GM. Maybe we can get the other GM on.
Thanks. Congrats on your show, guys.
Yeah,
I'm excited for you.
Yeah, we're excited. You've always been one of my favorite guys to talk to. So we are certainly pulling for the 49ers when they're not playing the Broncos.